If that is the case, their suffering should be easy to bear. They are the common lot of human beings, and perhaps the best one can hope for. I don't know. If you've slept soundly at night, the morning is exhilarating, I suppose. What kind of dreams do they have? What do they think about when they walk along the street? Money? Hardly, it couldn't only be that. It seemed to have heard the theory advanced that human beings live in order to eat, but I've never heard someone say that they lived in order to make money. No. And yet, in some instances, no, I don't even know that. The more I think of it, the less I understand. All I feel are the assaults of apprehension and terror at the thought that I am the only one who is entirely unlike the rest. It is almost impossible for me to converse with other people. What should I talk about? How should I say it? I don't know. This was how I happened to invent my calling. It was the last quest for love. I was to direct at human beings. Although I had a mortal dread of human beings, I seemed quite unable to renounce their society. I managed to maintain on the surface a smile which never deserted my lips. It was the accommodation I offered to others, a most precarious achievement performed by me only at the cost of excruciating efforts within. As a child, I had absolutely no notion of what others, even members of my own family, might be suffering or what they were thinking. I was aware only of my own unspeakable fears and embarrassments. Before anyone realized it, I had become an accomplished clown, a child who never spoke a single truthful word. I have noticed that in photographs of me taken about that time together with my family, the others all have serious faces. Only mine is invariably contorted into a peculiar smile. This was one more variety of my childish, pathetic antics. Again, I never once answered back anything said to me by my family. The last word of reproof struck me with the force of a thunderbolt and drove me almost out of my head. Answer back. Far from it, I felt convinced that their reprimands were without doubt the voices of human truth speaking to me from eternity's past. I was obsessed with the idea that since I lacked the strength to act in accordance with this truth, I might already have been disqualified from living among human beings. This belief made me incapable of arguments or self-justification. Whenever anyone criticized me, I felt certain that I had been living under the most dreadful misapprehension. I always accepted the attack in silence. Though inwardly so terrified as almost to be out of my mind. It is true, I suppose, that nobody finds it exactly pleasant to be criticized or shouted at But I see in the face of the human being raging at me a wild animal in its true colors, one more horrible than any lion, crocodile, or dragon. People normally seem to be hiding this true nature, but an occasion will arise, as when an ox sedately ensconced in a grassy meadow suddenly lashes out with its tail to kill the horsefly on its flank. When anger makes them reveal in a flash human nature in all its horror. Seeing this happen has always induced in me a fear great enough to make my hair stand on end. At the thought that this nature might be one of the prerequisites for survival as a human being, I have come close to despairing of myself. I has always shook with fright before human beings, unable as I was to feel the last particle of confidence in my ability to speak and act like a human being. I kept my solitary agonies locked in my breast. I kept my melancholy and my agitation hidden, careful lest any trace should be left exposed. I think an innocent optimism. I gradually perfected myself in the role of the farcical eccentric. I thought, as long as I can make them laugh, it doesn't matter how, I'll be alright. If I succeed in that, the human beings probably won't mind it too much if I remain outside their lives. The one thing I must avoid is becoming offensive in their eyes. I shall be nothing, the wind, the sky. My activities as jester, a role born of desperation, were extended even to the servants, whom I feared even more than my family, because I found them incomprehensible. In the summer I made everybody laugh by sauntering through the house wearing a red woolen sweater under my cotton kimono. Even my elder brother, who was really given to mirth, burst off laughing and commented in intolerably affectionate tones, "That doesn't look so good on you, Yozo." But for all my follies, I was not so insensitive to heat and cold as to walk around in a woolen sweater at the height of summer. I had pulled my little sister's leggings over my arms, letting just enough stick out at the opening of the sleeves to give the impression that I was wearing a sweater. I had put my little sister's leggings over my arms, letting just enough stick out at the opening of the sleeves to give the impression that I was wearing a sweater. My father frequently had business in Tokyo and maintained a dorm house for that reason. He spent 2 or 3 weeks of the month at a time in the city, always returning laden with a really staggering quantity of presents, not only for members of our immediate family, but even for our relatives. It was a kind of hobby on his part. Once, the night before he was to leave for Tokyo, he summoned all the children to the bar and smilingly asked us what present we would like this time, carefully noting each child's reply in little book. It was most unusual for father to behave so affectionately with the children.